Good evening and welcome. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. And we've got a great show lined up for you this evening. We're going to be talking about possibly one of the most terrifying, ghost, haunting, demonic infestation stories I've ever heard. In the last 9 years of covering strange and paranormal supernatural encounters, this story definitely goes down as one of the creepiest stories out there. The book is out and available. A Deadly Haunting just came out this last week. We have joining us in a little bit author Joey Albrecht and haunting survivor Debbie Moffitt. Drawing upon the frightening experiences of the Moffitt family, author Joey Albrecht paints a compelling portrait of the family's chilling interactions with a demonic entity, capturing the horrifying reality of this true story that's been hidden now for over 25 years. We're going to relive the Moffitt family struggles against this vastly intelligent and destructive demon and their daily battle to maintain their sanity and physical well-being. Though many believe demons to be beings wrought of mindless hate and malice, the book A Deadly Haunting will challenge that perception and change the way you see evil. From 1984 to 1990, Debbie Moffitt and her family were haunted by a demonic entity, and for 6 years, they were denied any semblance of a normal existence. Isolated from friends and family, they were left to actually suffer in secrecy. They were prisoners in their own home. Author Joey Albrecht and survivor Debbie Moffitt join us next on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for this evening, Dave Schrader. We'll be opening up phone lines in hour four. If you have questions for our guests, if you have stories of your own malevolent or demonic hauntings, we want to hear them. We'll be doing that in hour four of this evening's show. Joining me right now is Ms. Joey Albrecht. She's an award-winning writer, director, producer, and voice director who's created programming for national networks, national cable, syndication, corporations, and individuals for the past 25 years, most of which have been in the top 10 of the Nielsen ratings and have received critical acclaim. Today, her focus is now on writing books and raising funds for her family feature films. Ms. Albrecht was responsible for over 80 aired hours of primetime network and national cable programs and has been contracted by the Disney Company, Disney Channel, Johnny Carson Productions, Stephen J. Cannell, and Ron Howard, among others. She's here this evening to share her story of a deadly haunting that she worked very diligently with the survivor to share this amazing story. You know, Joey, this is truly one of the creepiest books I've ever had a chance to pick up and read, and for so many reasons. But I'm so intrigued. You look at your resume, and it's an amazing resume, but I mean, you've worked with NBC and Disney on all of these amazing cartoons and anniversary shows and TV's bloopers and funniest practical jokes. I don't see any dark paranormal presence in your in your archives here. What drew you to a topic like A Deadly Haunting?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having us on the show. We really appreciate that. My background is in family entertainment, and that's what I really enjoy doing. But I've always been aware of, you know, paranormal kinds of things. And so when this opportunity came to me, it was something that I understood and that I thought really needed to be told.
Now, do you have any background in the paranormal yourself? I mean, was it just something that was an interest to you, or had you had experiences in your own life?
I've actually had experiences since as far back as I can remember as a child. I could, you know, perceive beings around and communicate with them and see energy patterns in the air and, you know, things like that. And I didn't realize until I started school that other people didn't have that. So, you know, then I wanted to not talk about it and to turn it off to be like a normal person.
Did you talk about it openly when you were a kid?
I did, until I found out that everyone thought that was weird, and then I stopped talking about it. You know, it wasn't until I was in my late teen years that I realized that these were gifts, and, you know, if I could help people with those gifts, then that was a beautiful thing.
You know, so many people say that children, many children have this ability, this innate ability to see things and experience them. But in your personal experience, that wasn't the case. You, when you talked to other friends, there was nobody else that was able to do what you could do. Is that right?
No, not anyone that I knew, you know. And although my parents didn't tell me that I was crazy, they looked at me like, we don't know, you know.
Right. Now, did you, you know, going through life having some abilities and being able to sense these things and now realizing not everybody could do that, did it frighten you to have that kind of ability? Did it make you feel like an outsider or strange yourself?
It didn't make me feel strange or in that sense. The only thing that made me feel strange is that other people didn't understand it. And so, you know, rather than having people turn away from me or be apprehensive about me, I would just not talk about it.
Did you, I mean, upon seeing things and experiencing them yourselves, did you ever run into something that you would consider evil or possibly demonic in nature?
Yeah, a couple of times I've run across beings that were not at all pleasant, but nothing nearly like Debbie and her family experienced. I've never heard of anyone who's experienced anything like they did.
Right. Now, I've read a lot of books over the years, immersing myself in this since I was a teenager, my mom and aunt having books all over the house on everything from the Amityville Horror cases to Hans Holzer cases, D. Scott Rogo, you name it, we've read it. And this story really, you wrote it beautifully, seamlessly. It gets into your head. There are a few times, I'll tell you, Joey, I'm not ashamed to admit, as a 46-year-old, 245-pound man, I was peeking over the top of that book, nervously checking to make sure nothing was in my house. And I'll tell you what, I'm nervous to look at mirrors in my house after reading this book, and we'll discuss that a little bit more later. How did this story come to your attention?
Debbie and I had a mutual acquaintance, and he knew that she was looking to tell her story and seeking out a writer. And, you know, because of my background as a writer, he put the two of us together, but I don't think he was aware at all of my understanding and depth in this subject matter, and that's something that Debbie and I discussed. And, you know, we felt sort of destined that we were meant to come together to do this. And
now, this friend of yours, that he's bringing you this story, uh-huh. And does he look at it as though, you know, hey, this sounds really out there and crazy, but if you're looking for a book, this might be kind of a fun topic to flesh out and turn into a novel or possible movie options in the future.
That was kind of the impression that I got, yeah. You know, once he introduced us, then it was only between Debbie and I.
And you go, you sit down with this woman to hear her story.
Uh-huh.
And did you have any preconceived notions? I mean, were you thinking this is going to be, you know, nothing's going to top like an Amityville Horror story? I mean, was it that kind of feeling going into this meeting, or were you just blown away by what proceeded after you opened up this dialogue with her?
Well, going in, I knew it was a haunting, you know, so I was really interested to know what had happened. And the more we talked and the more she told me, the more I was blown away by this story. And, you know, because it was something that they didn't talk about, that was hidden for 25 years, you know, it took a while for those memories to come back to Debbie because she turned them off so much. So, you know, even weeks after we initially talked, she would call or email me and say, I remembered something else, you know. And, you know, even in our last interview with you, I think there was a couple of things that came up that I hadn't heard before. So
there are still things today that are surprising you from the story
that I didn't know about. Yeah. That she's just remembering.
Wow. All right. You start to hear the story unfold. You're picking up on the fact that this goes beyond just a haunting. This isn't Casper. This isn't somebody's grandma just hanging around the house. This is something very dark.
Right.
This is something with powers and abilities beyond most ghost stories we'll ever hear or encounter in our lifetime. How do you start to feel about that? I mean, are you at all nervous about involving yourself in this story when you hear how dark it really gets?
Yes, I was very nervous about it. and in fact, I had to think about it and to see if I really wanted to take this on because being very sensitive and open, you know, to other realms and other beings. You know, I didn't want in any way to take on a project that would somehow invite that being into my life, you know. So I meditated on it and thought about it, and I realized that, you know, as long as I wasn't afraid of it, you know, that it really couldn't have any power over me, and I was not going to give it permission to be around me. And I also know that I have a lot of angelic protection.
Well, okay, maybe that's part of the explanation then, because I've got to know, as somebody who hears stories all the time, you know, doing darkness radio for the last 9 years, there are some of these stories that just get into my head. And when I'm driving home, I have a hard time sleeping. I have a hard time concentrating on anything but some of the creepy details. This woman's unloading on you one of the most bizarre and truly frightening stories ever told. And, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, as long as I'm not afraid of this, how do you not be afraid? Listen, I've done a lot of things. I read your book. I'm afraid of the book. I mean, there's just, in my opinion, there's no way to walk away and not be unnerved by what you're reading. What do you do to separate yourself and not let that kind of get into you?
Well, you know, I can only give you my opinion, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that have different opinions, and that's fine, but you know, my belief is that evil beings really don't have power per se. They have the power to be excellent liars. They have the power to manipulate. And, you know, what I believe they do is they put scary pictures into your mind, and suddenly you're getting scared and you're imagining this and imagining that. But it's not you imagining it. It's them putting those scary pictures in your head. So if you realize that and just laugh and say, yeah, nice try, I know that's a lie, then in my experience, they've always just gone away.
Joining us now, the real-life experiencer, survivor of this story, Debbie Moffitt, again, from 1984 to 1990. Debbie and her family were haunted by this demonic entity. For over 6 years, they were denied any kind of normal life. They were totally isolated from friends and family, and they suffered through this in secrecy, prisoners in their own home. Debbie, thank you for coming forward and sharing your story live with us this evening on the show.
Well, thank you very much.
You have this mutual friend.
Yes, Steve.
And you talked to Steve about this story. Had you gone in depth into it, or were you just kind of flirting with the idea that, yeah, you know, I've dealt with some hauntings in my life?
No, this was actually the only haunting I've ever been involved in. And I just explained to him a little bit what was going on, and he became frightened of this. But he was having some writing done with Joey, and he suggested her. And the minute I met Joey, I just knew she was the one.
You're about to sit down with a stranger. Albeit a friend of a friend, you have to sit down and face this person. And no matter how lovely and kind of smile she has, as I can see from her photo on the book and on the profile that we have here, is there still a sense in you that you were afraid to really release a lot of the story for fear of being mocked or ridiculed or just having people believe that you were making this up?
No, that was a consideration. The truth is, I felt so good to just tell somebody about it. It just felt so good talking about it that I couldn't wait for the story to be told.
You know what you were up against.
Mm-hmm.
You, in your mind, you believe that this was truly a demonic entity. This wasn't just a really mad, malevolent ghost.
No,
you believe that this was a demonic entity, a being of dark force that
yes.
You and your family had engaged with.
Definitely.
Were you concerned, after all of these years separating from it, making your way out of the darkness and surviving it, were you concerned that reopening this wound and opening up about it and in a sense, giving it power again, that it could infect and reaffect your life?
Yes, I was. That did frighten me, and I talked to my children about this before we even approached Joey. And they know I just needed to get this out. I needed to talk to someone and let everybody know what happened. And it just, they agreed that we should just, and yes, for a long time, I thought, I just prayed, please don't let this come back. And now I feel very good now and very strong that it's not going to. But I'm just so glad that I'm able to tell my story.
Were you, aside from just the concern that it may reinfect your life and bother you and your loved ones, did you have a concern that by opening this story up and making Joey a part of your story, that it may negatively impact or influence her?
Do you know, I didn't, because it had been so long since anything had happened. It was just like when it stopped, it stopped. And for the last 25 years, nothing.
Reading the story and having spoken to you before, what amazes me is how calm and collect you are, even upon reflection, talking about this story. I've heard your story. I chatted with you. I've read the book. I start talking to somebody about the story, and people are, oh, what are you going to do on Coast to Coast? I got to tell you. And I get so amped up telling your story.
Yeah.
How do you remain calm? It seems like, I mean, this is a bizarre from start to finish story. I mean, everything from curses or hexes to demonic entities to possible murder to, you know, I mean, this book has everything.
It did. Everything happened. I mean, I can't think of anything that didn't happen. And when I think back on why I can stay calm about it now is because it happened so long ago. Sometimes it's almost like a nightmare I went through when I reflect back upon it. I sometimes think, how did I do it? But I didn't have a choice.
I'll start at the end for 1 second here, and then we'll start to flesh out your story, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a chance to exercise this demon in telling your story and getting it out on paper and getting the story back out there to the public so that other people that may be going through something similar will know that they're not alone.
Right.
Have you had any paranormal experiences since this book came to fruition?
No. No, everything is quiet.
And no experiences prior to this situation? You'd never had any other weirdness pop up in your life? Ghosts?
The only thing I had was when I was about 20 years old. I went and visited with my sister. We took a tour of Fort Oswego in New York. And at that time, in one of the buildings, I saw a ghost. And it reached out to me. It made me feel very sad. But it was also very startling. And I remember looking and then running out to get my sister so she could see it too. And I ran out like 2 or 3 different times. And each time I came back, it was standing there reaching out to me. And then the third time I came back with my sister, it was gone. Other than that, that was the only paranormal experience I have ever had.
So you were open to the idea of the paranormal in the past. It's not like it was a completely foreign slap to the face, something totally new and bizarre to you. This literally, you had had something, so you knew that there was more going on around us than just what we see every day.
Yes. And I had enjoyed growing up reading scary books and seeing scary movies. But to me, it was always amusement. It was always entertainment. But then when I experienced the ghost, then I realized, well, maybe there's more to this than I really understood. But he didn't scare me. He made me feel sad, but he did startle me.
All right. From 84 to 90 is when the press release mentions that you started with this. What was the actual kickoff point to this? How did this story begin?
Now, it began when I wasn't there. I was in New York at this time in 84. This story has to do with my husband, Bill, his father, Bill Sr., his mother, Lee, and her mother, Dominica. And they lived in houses, 3 houses right next to each other. And my mother-in-law's mother, Dominica, had a stroke and she needed constant care. And they hired a housekeeper who was Guatemalan, and she was taking care of her. When my grandmother, my husband's grandmother, really became very ill and was dying, we believe that the lady that was taking care of her performed some type of ritual, we think with Santeria, from what was found in the house when she left, and tried to keep her alive. And the day that she died, the lady went back to the house to stay that night. And in the middle of the night, she called my mother-in-law screaming for help. And my mother-in-law sent my husband and his cousin up to the house. And she came running out of the house. She even fell down the little stairs that were there screaming, help her, help her. And over her head, chasing her out the door, was a like a ball of energy, a ball of light, chasing her out of the house. And that this was all told to me by my husband, who witnessed it.
Now, this is the beginning of the story.
This is
our
the
guest
very
is,
beginning.
Our guest, Debbie Moffitt, also joining us, Joey Albrecht, the author of A Deadly Haunting. You can find more information about our guests, including photographs, evidence, and more of the story on the website, adeadlyhaunting.com. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of their story and more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Good evening, and thank you for joining me here tonight on Coast to Coast AM. This evening, our topic is a deadly haunting. This is truly one of the most freaky, terrifying, and unnerving stories I've ever read. And I've been reading these stories since I was about 14 years old. I'm now 46. And this book truly has me unnerved. It is one of the most compelling stories of a real life haunting. Joining us this evening is author Joey Albrecht. And we also have with us the survivor of this particular tale, Debbie Moffitt. We're going to hear more about their story right here on Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, David Schrader. I want to thank you all for tuning in and spending your Saturday night with us. For those of you that have already crossed the time zones, happy Easter. This evening, we're talking about a very chilling, real-life, supernatural encounter. The book is called A Deadly Haunting. And you can check out information about this book, including photographs from the book, from the real experiences, evidence right on their site at adeadlyhaunting.com. That's adeadlyhaunting.com. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. Look at tonight's show. You'll see all the links on how to order the book and how to find out more about our guests, author Joey Albrecht and experiencer Debbie Moffitt. Now, Debbie, you were explaining to us in the last segment before the commercial break here that this haunting started because of somebody slowly dying in your household, and you had a housekeeper. You had a, would you call it a nurse, a nursing assistant? Who was it that was aiding this woman, trying to use Santeria to keep her alive?
The housekeeper. She was trying to keep my husband's grandmother alive through Santeria.
And a lot of people might not know this, but voodoo, again, has been Hollywoodized. When you see these different things that they use, most of the tools in Santeria and in voodoo are actually used to try to help in medical ways and pinpoint energies to try to heal people. So automatically we jump to, oh my gosh, they're using some kind of black magic. They're using some kind of voodoo to cure this. But she was actually trying to help at the time. And keep her alive.
Yes.
How did it go wrong? Did she call something in by accident to try to give her power? How do you believe that opened up?
All I can think, and what I've been told by the people who have listened to this, has been that she tried to practice something she wasn't adept at, and she ended up opening a door and letting things through that shouldn't have come through, and she had no control over them.
Joey, can you attest, I mean, as somebody who's researching this book and looking into it, you start looking into things like Santeria and these forms of voodoo and magic. Are there strict disciplines that if you do miss a step or perhaps try to evoke something to help give you power to strengthen, could that be the door that's opened up to allow something malevolent in?
Well, in the research that I did, Santeria is known as a very powerful or their rites are known as very, very powerful rituals. And for someone who didn't know really what they were doing, was a neophyte, it's quite possible that she could have mixed things up, done the wrong thing at the wrong time, and opened a portal for this being to slip through, which is what everyone believes actually happened.
So explain this to us again. You said that now this was something that wasn't just witnessed by one dying old woman. This experience, Debbie, was witnessed by multiple people and saw this Santeria practitioner chased out of the house by a ball of light. An orb or some, I hate to use that term because it has such a negative connotation of in the paranormal field, but it was some kind of ball light that chased her from that home.
Yes, it did. And then after when she came out of the house, and like I said, she fell down the stairs, and then the light just went straight upward and dissipated. And she went, my husband and his cousin helped her back down to the house, the other next house that was next door, Lee's house, and she was screaming, she was sorry, and not to go back in that house. You couldn't go, no, don't anyone go back in that house. And the next morning, she stayed the rest of the night with my mother-in-law, and the next morning, someone picked her up very early in the morning, and she spoke to my mother-in-law before she left and said, she was sorry, don't ever go in that house, and she left. And they never heard from her again.
Now, I know that you believe that you did have angelics and things that were kind of watching out for you as well. Do you believe that maybe that ball of light was something positive trying to get her and whatever magic she was using out of that house? Or do you believe that this was the beginning of the manifestation she had allowed in?
Do you know, that's hard for me to say. I wasn't there. I didn't experience it, but I can tell you what my husband felt. He told me he felt that it was something good chasing her out of the house, trying to get rid of her.
Was your husband open and accepting to the idea of the paranormal?
He was open and he was frightened of it, as was my mother-in-law. Both of them were just terrified of it.
Now, in their life, had they been around the paranormal before? Was this something new to them or was this old hat?
I think it was new to them also. They mentioned one thing, my husband mentioned that when his grandfather died, the night he died, that something was turning the numbers on the radio, making it go to different stations and turned it on and off. Other than that, as far as I know, they were never touched by it.
All right, you've got this energy now. Something is going on. This woman is warning you, stay away from that house. Get out of that house. Don't go back in there. Now, has the mother-in-law passed away at this point?
No.
Okay. How much longer does she survive before, you know,
things? No, you're talking about the grandmother. The grandmother did die.
Okay.
No, the grandmother did die. The one that she was trying to keep alive died that day.
Okay,
and then
she did.
She came back to the house that night to spend the night. But the grandmother had already died.
All right, so the grandmother did pass away.
Yes.
And that was it. So the Santeria did not work, or it wasn't continuing to prolong her life. She finally expired at that point.
Yes.
Now, was there ever any encounters after the passing of the grandmother? Did they ever feel that she might have been around after this all took place?
No, they didn't.
All right. And had she...
That orb of light, which Debbie's husband felt, could be
right. The orb of light he felt was his grandmother chasing her out of her house.
Oh, right. So that might have been what it was. Maybe not even an angelic, but now the spirit of the grandmother chasing her out to keep protection over the house. Okay. All right. Wow, chilling. So you've got this going on. You've got all this going, but this is before you've entered the picture. Is that correct?
That's correct.
How many years, months, weeks before you become a part of the story?
Not for like 2.5 years.
In that 2.5 year span, was there continual paranormal activity going on around that property? And on this property, they had 3 homes on this parcel of property, correct?
Correct. And the one that the grandmother had lived in and was gone now, my mother-in-law went up a few weeks later to clean it out, and she found all types of strange paraphernalia throughout the house. She found candles burned down. She saw strange symbols. She found broken rosary beads in the corners. But my father-in-law wanted the house cleaned because he wanted it to be rented out. And they did rent it out like a few months later. They did rent it out to a man. And this gentleman, my husband told me, asked him, he said, has anybody died in this house? So paranormal things were probably happening, but he didn't want to talk about them.
They weren't acknowledging it. They were just trying to move about as though nothing had happened.
Right.
But the new renter picked up on something pretty much immediately.
Yes, he did. Because why else would he ask if someone had died in the house? And he acted strange. So,
did he get specific with your husband about what he thought was going on there, or why he believed it to be haunted?
No, he actually didn't. He just said he wondered if someone had died there. And then he mentioned something about talking on a Ouija board or something to my husband. Other than that, he didn't go into anything more. He just said that He just wanted to know if someone had died there. My husband got the impression things were happening, but he didn't want to discuss them. The gentleman liked the house. It was quiet for him. You know, the rent was good. So I don't think he wanted to move if something was happening, because he was happy there.
Was there any activity at this point in any of the other two homes, or was it strictly contained to the home where the grandmother died?
At that point, it was just in the grandmother's house.
Eventually, you come into this story. You become a part of this story.
Right.
How long is it before your husband starts to clue you in on what's going on?
Well, why he clued me in what was going on is the gentleman who had rented the house next door, the grandmother's house, had his son move in with him. And his son started to act. This is now I was with Bill. Bill and myself and his mother and father all lived together in the one house in the middle, because my husband had a heart problem. So we felt more comfortable just being together. So we lived together. The gentleman that lived in the grandmother's house, his son came to live with him. And the son seemed fine at first. And then the longer he was there, the stranger he became. One time my mother-in-law was walking by the house and he was in the backyard planting trees upside down.
Now, was he special needs in any way, shape, or form? Was there any kind of mental deficiency or handicap that
no,
you were familiar
with?
No, not
that we knew. He seemed like a perfectly normal person when he came to live with him.
You find out a little bit about this, you know, your husband kind of clues you in. Were you picking up anything? Were you sensitive to any kind of weird energy on this property yourself prior to being told what was going on?
Well, no, I never even went up to this house. The gentleman always came down to pay the rent. So I really had no, I never had been in the house.
Now, Debbie started experiencing things when they rented out the other house, the house that her husband had inherited from his aunt and uncle.
My husband, the house on the other side of Lee's house, my husband owned, and he rented that out for income. And that's when I first experienced paranormal things. We rented it out to a young man, very nice young man. The house was like a three-bedroom house, and we just rented out the one bedroom and kitchen facilities, and he can use the living room. My husband wanted to keep the den because he was a collector. He collected baseball paraphernalia, all kinds of things. And so he wanted to keep that lock and keep all his collections in there. And the very first thing that ever happened to me was my husband and I went down to go into that room because he wanted to check on his collections, because they were worth a lot of money. And someone had taken all the baseball collectible bobbleheads and formed in the middle of the rug a triangle with the bobbleheads. Well, my husband got very upset because he thought this young man had gotten into his room, and even though it was locked. And so he became very upset and confronted the gentleman, and he said, no, he had nothing to do with it. He wasn't in the room. So, of course, we didn't believe it. We thought he had gotten in and was just playing a joke or something. That was the very first thing that ever happened to me.
So you have this stuff going on. Now, this house, the third house, had your husband had anything paranormal go on in there that he was aware of prior to these, you know, to this man moving in?
No. Everything would have been quiet.
So why do you believe it jumped from the middle house where the grandmother was to now this third property? Why was it starting to influence and affect over there?
What I think happened is when the young man moved in with the father, he created a lot. He must have been, maybe he was unstable in some way and affected by this entity, and started to produce more energy for the entity to be able to use and to move around more. Because once the gentleman moved in next door with his father, then things start happening at the other house.
So now you've got two active properties, two active homes on this one parcel of land that are starting to hop up. Now your house, are you starting to have anything strange happen there, or is it still pretty much just contained to property 2 and 3?
Right. At first, it was just property 2 and 3. The more things that start happening down at house number 3, the gentleman wouldn't tell us what was going on. He you know, he would deny anything that we said he was doing, because when we would go down to check things started happening. One time we went down and I waited in the living room area for my husband to go in and check his collectibles. And as I was standing there, I looked up at the, there was a shelf that ran the whole length of the living room. And I just glanced up there because it was dusty, and I thought, I'm going to have to get up there and dust. And then I talked to my husband for a minute, and I looked back up, and everything, single statue that was on that shelf was turned backwards. That, and I said, my husband, that just happened. And he thought, of course, oh, no, this young man did it. I said, no, he couldn't have, because I just saw them looking at me, and now they're backwards. So it couldn't have been him.
Literally within a matter of seconds, your back, bam, you turn around, all of these statues are now facing the other way.
Right.
Now, this is your first major kind of holy poop moment. I mean, how do you start to process this? I mean, are you thinking, no, I've got to be mistaken. They must have been that way. Because that just seems, I mean, that seems like something straight out of a horror movie.
I know.
How do you start to accept that?
When I first saw it, I said, now, did I see that right? But right. I knew, because I had looked because of the dust. So I know I had examined it before. And then when I turned back and turned around, there it was all backwards. So I knew it had happened right in front of me and right from when I turned my back.
But at this point, it's nothing malevolent. It's nothing dark or frightening. It's more mischievous and playful.
And amazing. That's what it was to me. Because then other things would start happening when we came down. We'd come down and furniture from one room would be moved into the other room. It got to the point, it was like, I like to go down just to see what was happening. You know, it was amazing. And the young man at this point told us he was going to be leaving. And he left like one weekend. He just picked up and left. He didn't. But during this time, this is what happened during this time. Things did start happening in my mother-in-law's house. And one of the things that was happening was some of this gentleman's possessions were being taken to my mother-in-law's bedroom. In my mother-in-law's bedroom, she was very religious. Next to her bed, she had this beautiful chest, the cedar chest. And on top of it, she had all her saints. And she would pray there every night before she went to bed. Well, she would wake up in the morning and there'd be articles that didn't belong to any of us sitting on the chest. And I remember one thing was a watch that I knew, my husband especially knew, belonged to this gentleman. And it was up in my mother-in-law's bedroom.
Now this is while he's still living there. It's not after he's left. And things are now what we call apporting. They're moving from one house to another of their own accord and appearing in your house.
Right. And we couldn't, I mean, we had to take them back and sneak them back because you couldn't say to the gentleman, here's your watch, because he would think we took his watch.
Right.
So, you know, it would always put you in a very strange position.
Now, on the other side of that, did you think the first time or two you found this stuff, did you think, what was this guy up in our house when we weren't here? Or was he sneaking in?
I really never thought that.
Really? Because see, that would have creeped me out.
We had dogs, so I didn't think he'd. That at all. We couldn't figure out how they were getting there. I didn't even know what an apport was at that time.
Well, she certainly was convinced of it once they took the watch back, left it on the table, and before they could walk back to the house, Lee was standing at the front door with the watch in her hand saying, I thought you were going to take care of this.
Unbelievable. We are just scratching the surface right now. Our guest, Debbie Moffitt, a real-life paranormal survivor. Also, Joey Albrecht, the author of this book. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more A Deadly Haunting on Coast to Coast AM.